Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we're brought to you by, of course, RacePlace.com. RunCatalina.com, Catalina Eco Marathon coming up in late November. And you can also check out the Challenge Athletes Foundation, where we've raised over $65 million to keep athletes in the game of life through sport. And you can listen to any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. Our next guest, really one of the best guys in the sport of obstacle racing and in Spartan racing. He's known as the Bear, Matt Novakovich. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Now, are you up in Alaska?
I'm sitting in Anchorage, Alaska right now as we speak. But that's where I'm from, born and raised.
Born and raised. So growing up, what were your sports growing up?
I loved team sports, but I was always kind of fell on the side of smaller. So I kind of found myself doing endurance sports as kind of a consolation prize, if you will.
So you were a cross-country track and field type of guy?
Yeah, and in Alaska, we produce a lot of Olympic cross-country skiers out of here.
Yeah.
And that's a huge sport. Like in high school, you'll have teams, all of the high schools have 100 to 150 kids on the cross-country skiing team.
And that was you. You were the guy cross-country running, cross-country skiing.
Yeah, I did. Running to get ready for skiing. All my sports went towards being a better cross-country skier.
And what were your goals to, you know, to get a collegiate scholarship, to think Olympics, or what was the end goal for you, or you just loved it?
I think I just loved it. And then ultimately, as I got older, I finally made varsity in running. And I kind of was like, man, this is a blast. And I fell in love with running overnight. And so the summer between high school graduation and college, I started running a lot. I went from running, 20 or 30 miles a week in high school to I just like went to 70 and 80. And I walked on at Brigham Young University. And I found that I was a pretty good runner. I made the team. But
wow.
I was a little bit hefty for a runner, if that makes any sense. And so luckily, someone invented the steeplechase, which was kind of the perfect combination of a little upper body strength to go along with some endurance running.
I always equate, and steeplechasers are like my favorite guys in the world. I look at the sort of the toughest events in the different sports. Steeplechase is it when it comes to track and field. And Tom Hunt was a top steeplechaser. He held American record at 10,000 meters. And he told me that when you're doing this, and when you're doing most events, you fade a little bit. When you're doing the steeple, it's like someone's standing in a corner with a piano and he just dumps it on you.
Nice.
Like all of a sudden you're going, you feel like, oh, I'm doing good, and the next minute you're gone. You're saying there's no in between. You're either full out or you're dead. What drew you to steeple?
I just liked it seemed like it was more of a race. Like there was, you weren't quite out of it. Maybe it's that piano analogy you gave. I think when running a marathon, you kind of know that you're going to shoot for 2:30. And if the guy next to you is shooting for 2:20, you're not even going to go out with him for 5 seconds because you have to start at a controlled, thought out pace that you're going to stick with. Whereas a steeple, there's times I can go out at maybe 8:40 pace and fade to a 9:20 and survive it. There's times that maybe guys would go out too fast, but those barriers accelerating and deaccelerating, and like every time you'd come down from that hurdle or come off that steeple and land in the water, it's almost like it decompressed everything and you kind of had to reset and become an athlete again as you kind of propelled yourself into the race. There was no comfort zone where you could just chill and just kind of go into a mind dump and just run mile after mile.
What I love about the steeple is every track meet, where do people hover? They go to the pit. Right, you go to the pit because that's where the chaos reigns. That's where you know that somebody is going to biff and other people are going to do the tap dance on them with their spikes.
Exactly.
I love that. What the worst thing you ever saw in the steeple in terms of probably in the pit?
Just like someone would be about to make their hurdle, their hurdling follow leg would always hit that barrier, and that barrier is 36 inches high, and it's a 4x4 solid rock. And so when that trail leg would hit, they would face plant, go over the top, like wrap themselves into the water, and then, like you said, it was someone stepping on top of their head, and then they would trip. It's always that pile up right at the water pit.
I love that. And so, you ran the steeple all through college at Brigham Young?
Right.
And then, so after college is always tough for guys who are athletic. Because it's like you get to a point where you go, okay, I can look. It like you said, with the marathon, the 220 or 230, you can look at your times and go, okay, I'm an Olympic contender, or that there's no future for me in this. When you came out of college, did you think you could, were you that Olympic pedigree, or was it, okay, now I got to figure something else out?
I was definitely not Olympic pedigree. I was probably 15 seconds away from even going to nationals in the steeple,
right?
20 seconds away from Olympic qualifying, and that's 5% at least.
Oh yeah.
And so, I think the thing that it kind of that I've been blessed with is I love a new challenge, and so for me it was, I immediately got up into Alaska and I found myself liked mountain biking, and so then next thing I know I'm mountain bike racing, and yep. That went on for a couple of years, and then I all of a sudden thought, hey, I want to be a runner again, so I thought I'd start running marathons and training for those, and after marathon running, I thought I kind of would find a point where I wasn't getting any better, and I was realistic enough to know, hey, this challenge I might have peaked out, and there might not be much more, and so then I would kind of switch up sports, and so I was always kind of looking for a new challenge.
Yeah.
After the marathon, I went into more road biking. I got really dedicated to that. I became a Cat 2 rider pretty quickly.
Wow.
And then I became a Cat 1 cyclist. And then I was always trying to get on a composite team so I could do it on a semi-pro level. And that was fun. It was exciting, but the dilemma was always I lived in Alaska. So getting me there to be a composite racer on a team was always
a little too expensive.
X plus $1,000, because that was the plane flight
to
get from Alaska to anywhere.
The hardest thing is, you know, it's funny. You look back, and you're a little younger than the guys I got into our sport with, like Ned Overend and Dave Scott and those type of guys. But, you know, Ned and I were roommates when we did Ironman together, and this guy was a mechanic at San Diego Suzuki, and mountain bikes hadn't been invented yet. So you were basically doing these other sports and event, and what you do now, obstacle racing, hadn't been invented yet.
Exactly.
The thing that was perfect for you. For Dave Scott, he was a swimmer who knew that, you know what, I can't be an Olympic swimmer. I just don't have the genetics to do that, but I know I work harder than everybody else. We go into the gym, man, I lift more weights than anybody else, but that's the point of no return. Ned was a mountain runner who's got to a certain level. But all of a sudden, here, this new sport of mountain biking was perfect for you. When did you find what would become your best sport, Spartan racing and adventure racing, or obstacle racing?
I basically kind of tapped out with cycling. I found how good I was going to get, and I was a really good climber on the bike. And there was a race in Alaska, the mountain running race called Mount Marathon. And it's not a marathon, but it's actually the name of the mountain is Mount Marathon. But it was just a crazy event. It's really hard to get into. Brings out some of the best Olympic caliber athletes across the world. In fact, this year, Kilian Jornet and the Solomon team came up and did it. It has a draw to it because people die in this race. It's like
wow,
one of the biggest, most spectated races, literally, in the planet for endurance racing. We'll get 40 to 50,000 people will come to the city of Seward, Alaska, to watch this race. And growing up, I always just watched it, but I never could get into it. It goes up at 60% incline,
goes straight up
the mountain. You circle a rock at the top, and then you come down the 3,000 feet you just climbed all the way to the bottom into the town, and the streets of the mountain is lined with people. And I never got into it until finally I wrote a special letter of request where I said, hey, I'm the best climber on a bike. I've set all these climbing records on a bike. Nationally, I'm in the top 20 in the country for climbing. Let's see how I can do in your mountain running race. And so they let me in it. I started a bet with a friend who didn't think I could get in the top 30. And I kind of took offense to that. And I said, you know what? I'll bet you I can get in the top 10. And loser has to wear a Speedo in the next running race, across town.
So well, what'd you do?
I got 11th place, but the guy who was going to win that day, he exhausted and collapsed literally 100 yards from the finish line, didn't finish the race. So I went from 11th to 10th, and my buddy Jerry was wearing a Speedo 1 month later in one of the most popular races, road races in Anchorage.
And pretty bitter about it, I'm betting.
It was good times. It was a good laugh, for sure.
I love that. The Speedo bet is always a good one. Was it a pink Speedo?
I got to choose it. It was kind of a flower, blue, light turquoise.
That is awesome.
It was gender neutral. Let's put it that way.
So when you did this thing, when you did that, did you get a sense like, this is what I'm meant to do? This is me. I need something that's brutal. That's really, really hard, really, really challenging. You have to think, right? You can't just go and go all out. Right away, did you get a sense that this was what you needed to find?
I just knew that I wanted to put everything I had, and I wanted to figure out what it would take to win that race.
Yeah.
And that was about 7 years ago, but the next year I tried really hard. I tried to revolutionize my training. I lost a bunch of weight. I got really skinny. I became a runner again, and I got 10th place again. The next year, I thought, I'm going to start climbing mountains with a 40-pound weight vest all the time. I gained 10 or 15 pounds. I got really stocky, really strong. I could carry a piano. But then I think that year I got 11th. And the next year I got 5th. And I was always trying to figure out a way that I could kind of revolutionize training specificity for that race.
Yeah.
And then finally the 5th year, I got it all dialed in, and I won the event with one of the faster times. And then I had a great climbing season. I was the first and only person to win all the major climbing races in Alaska, and I was hooked.
Yeah.
And then not make this story too long and boring.
No. It's a great story.
The next year, my only goal for 364 days was to set the record at Mount Marathon, and I trained. I did all of my training for mountain climbing. That's all I cared about. That's all I did. I didn't do a push-up for probably 3 years straight. I was just trying to have total legs, no upper body. I wanted to be the greatest climber. And that year, there was so much hype in the race that I was going for the record. Well, it turns out that another guy set the record, and I basically fell flat on my face. I think I got 11th that year. And I was kind of like, man, I had so much fitness, and I just kind of blew it. Like, that was the race I was shooting for. And along comes an invitation to try this race, and I was going to do Pikes Peak Marathon.
Yep.
And I was waiting to get accepted into my invite into that race, and it was kind of back and forth. And I finally got my invite to that race a week prior to it, and I was like, my brother-in-law said, come try this Spartan race in Virginia. It's a real climbing-heavy course. It's kind of crazy event. There's a spear throw. You're going underwater. You're going up
barbed
and over
wire, walls. Yeah.
There's barbed wire, but Matt, there's tons of climbing. Like, you might win. If you win the race, you'll get a free entry into the next one. And I thought, that sounds a lot. You know what? I'm gonna do it. And I took my fitness that I had, that it was all dedicated towards Pikes Peak Marathon, and I went down and I did the Virginia Spartan Race, and that was my very first. I didn't know what it was. I'd never Googled Spartan. I didn't know anything about the competitors, and there I was.
And how'd you do?
It was wild. I came across the finish line in first, and the team director of Spartan comes over to me and says, oh my gosh, you just beat the undefeated Hobie Call. And I said, oh, that's cool. Awesome. And he's like, we want to sign you. Like, we want to get you involved with Reebok and World Championships coming up in a month. Like, we want to sign you to be on the team. And it was like, well, what does that mean? He says, it's like free travel across the country. You're on our team. We'll fly you to every race you want to go to. And it was just kind of surreal for me, because I'm like, well, this is a great time to have I think I was 38 or 39 at the time. And so this is kind of a fun little midlife crisis. Here I tried my whole life as a cyclist to make some money doing that. And here I'm getting offered a kind of a position to be on the Spartan Pro team.
We see that all the time, though. You think about it. Like I said, Ned was a mountain runner who had actually finished second at Pikes Peak Marathon twice in a row. And to a guy named Al Waqi, right? He's got some guy who is 5'3", 110 pounds going uphill.
Right.
Who's going to win that battle? I don't care how much Ned trains. What was the difference training-wise from when you finally did win Mountain Marathon? What had you done differently to basically move from 10th to 5th, to first place?
Well, if I could, the answer to the question you just asked me, I would pay $10,000 if I could build a time machine and go back.
And figure it out?
And never have answered the question originally when someone asked me that.
Uh-huh.
But the secret's out. So what I started doing is I got a knee injury. I got knee surgery, and I couldn't run. So I was trying to figure out what I could do that could help my mountain climbing. And I was looking for a treadmill that could go steeper than 15%. and I was putting phone books under treadmills, and I was burning out motors.
Yeah.
And then I Nordic Track made this one that
25
was kind of worked.
Or something? 25%?
Yeah, it goes up to like 40, but I kept burning motors out because I didn't want to hang on to the handles because that doesn't give you the right angle for climbing.
Yeah.
Dude, I probably spent 2 to 3 hours a day on a treadmill in my garage at anywhere from 25 to 40% climbing, and that's how a 40-year-old can put in the equivalent of 130 miles a week without their knees getting jacked up. And
were you walking the treadmill? You weren't running.
Running would be say an interval, but like. If you're walking, grinding away, that's equivalent to probably, you know.
Oh, easily.
It's still a 620, 630 mile. You're still, heart rate's still 150, even when you're walking.
Yes. So that saved your knees. That allowed you to do, because it's funny, we've seen that with triathlon where, you know, a lot of runners get into the sport of triathlon. They've got all this fitness from running. And they end up running less because they can do so much of their anaerobic work on the bike and swimming. And
then
they can still run really well without doing the high intensity that messes up your knees.
Sure. Now, I'll get people who will give me coaching advice and say, man, you need to pick your running up, and I'll dabble it up to 20 or 30 miles a week. And then immediately my knees say, nope, you're 41 years old.
Exactly.
But I can do a 3-hour workout on the treadmill. Including massive amounts of sandbag carrying and heavy weight carrying, and then I don't feel tired or sore at all. It's like the knees are ready to go again the next day.
What's interesting to me is it seems like the specificity of training. When I was talking to Hobie Call, he was talking about, you know, when he was running with a 40-pound weight vest and thinking that he could run run sub 2 hours for the marathon. If he had been, you know, 22, 23 years old coaching himself, that he felt that, you know, if he could get to a 4:36 mile with a 40-pound weight vest on, that he could become, you know, the sub-2-hour marathoner. The specificity that you guys are doing now, I saw you've got your own training facility sort of in your backyard. You can practice the spear throw, like you said. You're doing stuff with sandbags. How important has that become? Because the obstacles change a little bit from event to event, but you still sort of know what the themes are going to be.
For sure. It comes down to the fact that now the sport's getting, the sport pays enough that it's drawing the best athletes from every single sport. If you're a triathlete and you're not the best in the country, it's pretty hard to go pick up $3,000. Spartan Racing might draw a triathlete who has potential to go for that $3,000, maybe even on their first race attempt. So,
yeah.
And then what we're getting is no one's failing obstacles very often anymore. So at my level, if I fail an obstacle at a race, you know, this year on NBC, it's not out yet, but
the Breckenridge race.
I could have won Breckenridge, but I missed the spear throw. The first time I've ever missed when it mattered in a race, and I choked on TV. You'll see it in a couple months, but I could have won that race. Instead, I made that mistake. I got kind of that nervous energy. I missed the spear throw, and I went from first to seventh, from, you know, hero to zero in 60 seconds.
Now, at this point, can, like you said, people making 3,000 an event between, when I was at the event in Pennsylvania, you had Panasonic there, Samsung was there, Reebok obviously is title for the Spartan Series. You're doing, I think, 6 events on NBC this year. Has it gotten to the point where you can make a living as an obstacle racer, or do you still need to have a real job?
I think it depends on an individual's level. I mean, you could definitely be single and make a living off it. I would say that someone at the top of their game could make, if they do it right, could make $30,000 to $50,000 a year.
Okay.
In my situation, I have a family of 4, and we have a certain lifestyle. So with that lifestyle that we've created, I still continue to work. I mean, I just finished roofing today. In fact, one of my guys couldn't make it, so I found myself up on the roof carrying around 80-pound rolls and setting them down and using the 1,000-degree torch and sweating and working, and that's just part of the training. But yeah, so that's kind of one of those questions where, well, what does anyone need to live, and what does someone consider a living?
Yeah, when I look at the other, I know that there's triathletes at the top end, the tippy top end, and you know, in any of these smaller sports, the the winner makes everything, and people who are second, third, fourth are looking for scraps a lot of times.
For sure. No, yeah. It's you're kind of as good as your last race, and if you lose too many in a row, all of a sudden Reebok doesn't call you or send you shoes anymore.
Well, and that's the thing is, I know in triathlon over the years, we've had people making, you know, 3, 4, and sometimes 500K. Between all the different sponsors, because you've got, you know, you got bikes, you got wheels, you've got nutrition, all that type of stuff. And as a guy who has a real job and four kids, correct? And how does it get to the point where it's like, man, I want to make a living just doing Spartan racing? Or is it nice to have that balance of having a real job so you don't have to depend on your last race?
I like the balance. I know a lot of guys have... You know, they were a school teacher, and they thought, hey, I'm making $40,000 a year as a school teacher. I'm going to give it my all and make $40,000 a year doing something fun. So I know a lot of guys have kind of given up their day job because it's working right now. My opinion is I enjoy the spice and the variety of life, so I'm totally content keeping my real job. And then also being realistic to know that I'm 41, I could break a leg tomorrow, right. And then all of a sudden they'd say, hey, let's going to go ahead and let your contracts dissolve, and thanks a lot. What was your name again? Next year, you know?
Exactly. So where did the nickname The Bear come from?
You know, when I first met Joe DeSena, he was super excited. I just beat Hobie.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, you're from Alaska. Like, there's bears. Like, I mean, and then next time I saw him, he's like, hey, Bear. And I thought, come again? He's like, hey, Bear. And I was like, okay, and the nickname was established, and that was kind of the first time I had heard that, but it came from Joe DeSena, and owner of Spartan.
Yeah, creator, yeah.
Since then, it's kind of fun, because I think, hey, I'm from Alaska, we do have a lot of bears, we have bears that come into our backyard, I've been around bears, I've had to kill a bear in self-defense in my life, and so yeah. It's kind of like, it's kind of fun, and I like the concept of an animal that would be out there adjusting to the environment and working hard and surviving and, you know, being kind of the tough guy amongst the other animals, and so that's kind of it's certainly endearing as far as I can tell. I like it.
You also seem like the type of guy that, the interesting, when you run a marathon, you know someone's going to be handing you a cup of water every mile, every couple of miles, you know, you're able to look at the course ahead of time. You know where it goes up, where it goes down. There's not a lot of surprises. What intrigues me about obstacle racing and Spartan racing is sort of like the metaphor for life, right? There's an obstacle around every corner, and you really don't know what's coming next.
For sure.
Is that part of the attraction for you?
Oh, definitely. I love the fact that I can be 2 minutes out of a race, and, man, it's always just like keep going. You never know what's going to happen next. And you know, prime example for me was in Montana. I was in about fifth or sixth place, and I was kind of rolling under the barbed wire close to the finish. And the guy I was with Chad Trammell, he was in fifth, and he was rolling pretty aggressive through the barbed wire. And if you go aggressive, it's fast, and you get a lot of scratches. And I thought, I'm in sixth place. I'm going to kind of chill out, get to the barbed wire, and maybe get fifth or so or whatever and call it good. And what happened in front of us, I still look back at that and think, what an idiotic mistake I made. Three guys in front of us missed the spear throw. Chad cruises on and gets second. This was the race that was just aired on NBC this week in Montana. And I roll into fifth. And had I been aggressive, racing like you're supposed to race all the way to the finish line, like your coach tells you in high school, I would have got second or third and or at least had a phenomenal battle with Chad going into the final obstacle. Instead, he was rewarded for his efforts, and I was like afterwards scratching my head saying, hey, those were some gifts in front of you that you kind of let go.
What do you learn from something like Breckenridge? Like you said, you're winning this race, and the spear is something. I watched video of you, the way you throw the spear and talking about throwing it like a dart. You know everything there is to know about the spear throw. When something like that happens, it's almost like a guy at the end of the game with a free throw. Right, it's like all of a sudden that rim starts to look small. I'm sure all of a sudden that target started to look smaller and smaller. You probably don't deal with that much when you miss that type of obstacle. How hard was it for you to deal with that?
Well, it was one of those moments where I think I was the only one in Spartan race to have never missed a spear throw. I think I was 40 for 40, and I can't, when I go through my little spear throw regimen, it's just like when a good athlete's shooting his free throw.
Right.
There's a certain program. Like, first thing I do is I straighten out the tip, and then I Then I point to the target, and then I make sure, you know, I just take a deep breath. That's number three. And then I look at the center of the target. I go through this little regimen. Instead, I show up. I was in third place at the time, and I was like, oh, my goodness, Hobie and Cody, they're doing burpees. Like, I'm going to win the Breckenridge race, the most competitive race. Holy, I couldn't believe it. Yeah, I was just like, I'm going to win. And that's all I was thinking about when I threw that spear. And I didn't even think of my regimen. And it bounces off wide. It hits. And next thing I know, I'm doing burpees, watching guys go past me who made it. And so, yeah, it was kind of like, I think I deserved third in that race. I didn't deserve first. But when it's all said and done, I got seventh. And that's the part where you say, hey, that's on me. That's the fun of this sport, is staying it to the end.
The other thing that I love about sports like this and sports like triathlon is, it's not often that I can go play the Masters course with Jack Nicklaus or, you know, one of the top guys. But you guys are the best in the world at what you do. And average people, everyday people, people trying to lose weight, people trying to change their life through this sport are out there with you. How important is that aspect of it to you, just knowing that people are changing their lives through this sport?
It's actually one of the things that keeps me in it. People say, well, geez, I've done 44 Spartan races now in the last year and a half.
Oh, my God.
So people say, are you bored yet? Or when are you quitting? And yeah. I think I can finish a race, walk back and hang out on course for 2 hours, and it's still interesting to me watching the people who do it, the people who are pushing just as hard or even harder than I had to push. I'll see people from, you know, ripped out of their minds, athletes who are, you know, just phenomenal bodybuilding-like bodies that weigh 200 pounds that just you would never see them lining up in a marathon, and they're grinding through the course. Then I'll see a guy who's 500 pounds who's just trying to turn his life around, and he's motivated to try to finish the course. And I think this is absolutely entertaining. This is, like, inspiring on so many levels that I've never seen in so many sports. So many sports have barriers to entry. You know, if you want to be a triathlete, you need your $6,200 Cervelo. I don't know, what are we on now, the P5?
Yeah, it's expensive. You're absolutely right. You need a wetsuit. You need a $600 or $1,200 wetsuit. Yeah, all of it.
You might need $800 to get into the event. I mean, yeah. It's kind of like, that's how it is. That's okay. But I just love it. There's no... You just put your shoes on. You just go. You can walk the course. You can do it with a group of friends of 10, or you can actually train specifically for it, and it's pretty rewarding to take it to your greatest level, too.
As a guy who, you know, and I look at the athletic odyssey, you know, the best triathlete female in the world, Marinda Carfrae, was a 5'3" basketball player in Australia before she found triathlon and is the best in the world. You were a steeplechaser, a runner, a mountain biker, a cyclist, looking for what is my sport. I know it's out there somewhere. Now that you found it, do you appreciate it more than maybe you did the other sports? Is it the fact that you found something that obviously is your calling?
Well, if you're Shaquille O'Neal, you sure are glad basketball exists.
Yeah, exactly. You're right.
And for me, if you're I range typically between 150 and 170 pounds, depending on what I do with my training. And if you're that weight, but you have a great, I have a pretty high VO2 max for a 41-year-old. I probably have one of the higher, I'm in the 70s.
Wow, and, you're in the 70s in your VO2 max. That's high.
And I can still see 195-plus heart rate. So I've been blessed with that, but almost you could say, well, yeah, I'm kind of cursed with the weight. You know, at 150 pounds, it's hard to go run a 14-minute 5K.
Right.
So... come along, you know, this outcome Spartan race, and I'm thinking, this is really ironic that they invented a sport for me specifically. Thank you, Joe.
Well, exactly. I mean, think about it. If the Ironman hadn't come around, Dave Scott might be your swim coach, right? Who knows what might have happened.
Exactly.
So when guys come out, and I'm sure it happens a lot, you get some 14-minute 5K guy who, you know, comes out to the race, you see him, you go, okay, I know this guy's fast. But they really have no idea. They know that they're going to be climbing early on and they're going to run away from you. Do you sort of chuckle at yourself thinking, he's going to find out that this isn't a running race?
If I, you know, it's funny, I have kind of an algorithm that's in my head already. If I see a guy who's slender, maybe on the skinny side,
yeah.
And let's say someone says, dude, that guy runs a 13:40 5K.
Yeah.
I would bet my car that I can beat him. But what scares me is when a guy is about 15, 30, 16 minutes,
yes,
and he's well-built, and you're just like, ooh, this could be the next big guy. And that's the interesting thing. It's kind of like if you're running 13-minute 5K, I guarantee you can't do the Hercules that weighs 135 pounds.
Right.
You're not going to do well with that 100-pound Atlas ball of that concrete block. I guarantee you I'm going to carry a log up a mountain longer and faster than you can. But you might get a 3-minute lead on me going into the first 3-mile section that has maybe fewer obstacles.
But when the obstacles come along, that's where things even out.
Well, that's what makes it so fun. I've been in races. One of my best rivals last year was Hunter McIntyre. I weighed 150 last year, and he weighs 200. There's no other competition on the planet that you could have a 150-pound guy going against a 200-pound guy on a course in Virginia that's climbing-oriented with heavy stuff that catered to him,
yep,
with climbing that caters to me, and we swapped leads in that race 12 times, and at 10 different times, he had over a 2-minute lead on me that I would bring back each time. So that's what's cool about it. It caters to every body type.
What I love about that is when you're watching a marathon on TV, when the guy takes the lead at mile 12, and you know what his PR is a 208, and the guy who's chasing him is 210, you know the race is over.
Right.
All right. And so what you're saying is you and Hunter, that especially for NBC, it's seriously the Yogi Berra, it ain't over till it's over. Because, one, you can miss an obstacle and have to, or miss a spear and have to do burpees. But, two, 50-pound weight difference, that certain parts of the course are going to suit him and certain parts of the course are going to suit you better.
For sure.
So when you look at the World Championship coming up in Tahoe early October, does that course suit you? It's up at altitude in Tahoe. What do you know about that course?
If they can get, I think they're struggling with a certain amount of permissions to, kind of like they did at Breckenridge. They have a course designer named Norm, and Norm gets in there with a machete, and he wants to cut these side trails and make it just rugged, going up and down the gnarly rocks and getting on the black diamond sections. Breckenridge, he was kind of bound by Breckenridge Ski Resort that he had to stay on the service roads.
Right, which gives someone like Hobie Call a big advantage.
And not to say he's not good at all the sections, but I would say that he can definitely roll over rolling terrain. That's when it becomes like, hey, maybe an ultra runner might have a chance to win.
Right.
But if it's gnarly and rugged and it's steep, then I think it's a great course for me. I love the altitude. I love the ruggedness of it, but just specifically the up and down climbing. If it's the steeper, the better, and that's where I really have a chance, because I've really been blessed with a threshold, an anaerobic threshold that can stay in the high 170s. And a lot of these younger guys, they got to recover. They got to go up something steep, but they better be getting down it quick, or I'm going to pull away from them on the long, just the arduous climbing sections.
I was reading a quote from you that basically the race becomes psychological. A lot of people get psyched out. Your philosophy, you can't control what the other guys, you just focus on yourself. Is that, sometimes I bet you have to bring yourself back to that because you can get caught up in what the other guys are doing.
Well, for sure. Sometimes I'll go to a race and there'll only be two or three pros there that it would have a chance to beat me.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like, okay, I'm going to watch what he's doing. I know what he's going to do. I know when he'll come back, and you say, hey, I have a good chance to win.
Right.
Some of these races now, though, there's enough prize money, and then NBC is bringing out the best competition. This year, we've had every race has been very stacked.
Right.
So there's no freebies anymore. Like, I have to have a perfect race to get on that podium, whereas before, oh, I missed an obstacle. I'm feeling a little sick because I trained through the race a little bit, perhaps, and I can still have a chance to win. Now it's you've got to have your A game there, because it's drawing some of the most elite people I've ever seen in any competition.
Well, and that's the other thing. With at this point, there's people out there who haven't tried this yet. I'm sure every race you go to, triathlon's been around for a long time. Running's been around for a long time. Very seldom is somebody going to surprise the top people. And we had a triathlon a few years ago, a gal named Chrissy Wellington from England, just all of a sudden went from short distance to long distance and won 13 iron distance races in a row, broke every record there was, and was like, came out of seriously nowhere, won a race like Ironman Korea, and next thing you know, she's winning the biggest race, the world championship in Kona, four times.
Right.
When you go to the race, are you always sort of thinking, okay, there's every day new people are finding out about this and finding out how to train for it. That next great person we haven't seen yet.
Well, I'll tell you what, last year the big guy on campus was Ryan Atkins, and everyone's like, what's he going to do this year? And I still think he's one of the favorites. But this year we haven't had a new guy until we're in Pennsylvania, this last NBC race.
Yeah.
And there was a triathlete there. Do you know his name by chance?
Not the triathlete who came to Breckenridge, not the guy from Bahamas, different guy. How'd he place in Pennsylvania?
Not Tyler Butterfield.
No, yeah, I was thinking Tyler, yeah.
I brought Tyler and,
Did you bring Tyler to Breckenridge?
Yeah, they brought me to an obstacle race in Bermuda, and like now they're like, he and his brother are like my best friends now, and, so they both came to Breckenridge, and we ran the beast together, Tyler and I, and, it was good times. And
I was trying to convince Tyler to come to Tahoe, but it's a week before Kona.
we'll probably get his brother.
Now, do you think could Tyler be a factor as a pro if he focused on it?
Let's see. I'm trying to think. In Breckenridge, he's from Colorado. He liked the altitude. he was rolling pretty good. He definitely got tripped up on some of the technical obstacles.
Yes.
I mean, you got to say yes. I mean, because he did well on all the heavy stuff. We were running neck and neck on the log carry. He's definitely not weak.
No, he's a strong guy. He's got good upper body. That's what
I
thought.
Yeah, so I'm going to say absolutely. I'm going to say I beat him easy because there was definitely a few obstacles where it was like, oh, by the way, you're about to get duped on this one because you don't know how to do it like I do. But other than that, it's not hard to learn some of those ones. This new guy was in Pennsylvania, and I apologize, I don't remember his name.
No, I'll look him up, because I didn't realize there was a tri guy there.
He's a tri guy. He's from the Air Force. Air Force.
I saw he was wearing military uniform, like a tri kit.
Yeah, he was leading that race up until the end, and he got caught by Atkins and Cody.
Cody, yes.
Cody Moat. They caught him in the barbed wire, which is a pretty technical, like, you don't know how fast you can go through barbed wire until you've been taught a few techniques.
Especially going downhill, then uphill.
Yeah, and it's just like, you don't quite know that you're allowed to get cut by barbed wire. That's such a weird thing that you're just going to charge into that stuff and let it scrape you on the back. And we know that it's just like, oh, you do it, and about a week later, the scratches go away. And if you're trying to win the race, you've got to be pretty ballistic in that stuff. And that guy led that race all the way up until that point. And I kept thinking, he's going to come back, and he never did. So I think that guy is the man to watch if he comes out to Tahoe. I think he's going to be a podium potential for sure if he wants to be.
So your kids are doing this as well, right?
Right. My wife does it.
Yeah.
My kids do it.
So it's a family affair.
For sure. It's again, it comes back to that thing. Like, my kids have crazy grip strength. They're super into the Ninja Warrior type stuff. My son does parkour, so he gets through these obstacles like they're nothing. Obviously, he's too small for the heavy carry stuff, but he moves well over climbing. But they all love it. It's like a jungle gym. I think that's what kind of I kind of compare Spartan to like Disneyland. They come to a ski resort. They build all these obstacles as kids that you used to love. And now all of a sudden, as an adult, you can do all these obstacles, and they build it in such a professional and consistent manner that there's nothing gimmicky about it. You just come, you know it's going to be the same, it's going to be clean, it's going to be safe, and you get to just absolutely go crazy in the mountains. It's pretty cool.
How have you had a change now that you're 41 in terms of nutrition? And like you said, with the training, you can't do the running that you'd want to do, so you're doing the real steep treadmill walking, which is pretty freaking tough. But in terms of how else have you had to change for age?
I think the biggest thing is I think it kind of clicks. Like, at about the age of 33, all of a sudden it seemed like I couldn't just go have a big burger, fries, and a strawberry shake. And then for dinner, I'd go to bed. I'd put myself to bed with a bowl of cereal and a Coke. For me now, it's like, okay, I've actually got to take a few sacrifices. I've got to have a 6-inch sub sandwich at lunch instead of a 12-inch, and I got to hold off on the chips and the soda.
Yes.
now if I want to stay lean and kind of ripped like I need to be competitive, I definitely have to feel hungry occasionally. If I need to, I might have a calorie reduction for a few weeks so that I can get to the weight I need to be. So it's just kind of a little bit more effort to be conscientious of what I eat, right, and to have a little bit more self-control.
Love it. Hey, Matt, thanks so much for taking so much time. I'm really excited about this world championship coming up. And the sport of Spartan, just seeing how other athletes over time have sort of grown with the sport. Ned Overeem, Dave Scott, Marinda Cuffrey, you're one of those guys. You've grown with the sport from, you know, very early on. And to see it getting the attention it's getting, that's got to be pretty rewarding for you.
For sure, it's a blast. I take pride in the not only just the sport itself, but just the way it's organized and those who put the race together with, you know, Joe DeSena. But also, it's kind of cool just to see his team and his staff. And again, I don't mean to overuse the Disneyland analogy, unless I can get like a free Disneyland pass out of this. But it's kind of like when you're at Disneyland and a ride, like something breaks,
yeah,
they have that thing fixed in like 20 seconds. It's it's like if someone drops a piece of trash on the ground, it's up before it even hits the ground.
Yeah.
Now that's kind of how Spartan Race is. It's like they make a strong effort to make it just, like I said earlier, it's just safe. It's consistent. Their courses are clean. They just kind of have, it's just a neat experience every time I go to one. And I think that's kind of what, you know, I go to these races and I'll see 8,000 to 12,000 to 15,000 people at this event, and I'm thinking they're doing something right because they're drawing every single possible ability of human race to this event, and those people are telling their friends, and those people are coming back. Well, they're doing something right.
Well, they're doing something right, and you can feel it from when I went to Pennsylvania. I hung out with the staff, I hung out with the TV guys. And there's a passion there that I've seen at the Ironman World Championship, where the guys who are working the cameras, they want to be there. They know they're right, shooting something special. They know that there's Emmys in their future, and you can't mail it in. You've got to immerse yourself. So watching them spend 3 to 5 hours driving the course, you know, Kemp and the crew,
right,
you
right,
could tell how much they love it. And when you're with the staff, nobody's going, oh my God, we got an hour till we, or 3 hours till we can pack this thing up. Everybody is there to make sure that you at the front and the guy who's coming in last has the best day of their life, which, you know, it doesn't happen a lot. That comes from, you know, from Joe and from the rest of the higher ups that they believe in their event and they're not going to mail it in. They're going to make sure that every I is dotted and every T is crossed.
Yeah, well, but yeah, to go along with that, it's kind of like the start of our race starts at 7:30 a.m.
Yes,
they set us off with an amazing speech,
yes,
and then they throw the smoke in the smoke grenades in the air, and you're running off, and you feel like you're an all-star. And guess what they do? 20 heats later,
same thing. Everybody gets the same experience.
Everyone's like running a fresh course on with a fresh start. It's not like, hey, sloppy second,
you're up now.
You're seed number 196. Get out of here, you know?
Exactly.
This is like, start the music, start the parade. I mean, it's like everything's like, this is cool for everyone.
I love it. Love it. Our guest has been Matt the Bear Novakovic. Matt, thank you for taking so much time. I appreciate what you do and what you've done for the sport. The sport doesn't grow without people at the top understanding that the base of the pyramid, the brand new people coming in, they have to love it as much as you do for a sport to be successful.
For sure. I appreciate the opportunity, and it'd just be fun. Like if I give only one shout,
yes,
out, it'd
absolutely
be fun to have people follow me on my page, Matt the Bear Novakovic on Facebook.
And that's Novakovich.
Let me give it to you one more time. It's Novak. Uh-huh. O-V-I-C-H.
There it is. Novakovich. Matt the Bear Novakovic, one of the true legends of the sport of Spartan racing, has been our guest. We are brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, the Challenge Athletes Foundation, where we've raised over $65 million to keep athletes in the game of life through sport. And, of course, you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes and on Babbittville.com. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.